Hello, and welcome to installment number 12 of The Art of Relating. I am your host, Zach Schwartz, psychologist out in the world, but here we're just learning a system together. It's not for therapy or counseling, can't do that over the radio, but we can learn a set of concepts and skills that I call effective humanistic interaction training. And we're learning those concepts and skills to integrate some of those skills into our behavior is the real work of this. So remember to practice. Always remember to ground first. So we should probably start there. So get your bottom half set, a good base, connect to the ground, relax your knees and hips, open up your joints, relax your muscles. Flexible and strong is what you want from a base and connected to the earth. Number two, set your top half both relaxed and hold a shape that says, I'm worth something. I have power. I have strength. Assertive, centered, not aggressive, not acquiescent. And then a couple of grounding breaths. Remember, bottom to top, full both chambers. So drop your diaphragm. Deep breath in. Let it all go. A couple of those. Deep breath in. Let it all go. Shake out the kinks. That's number four. Places you're usually tight, make sure they're not. Back of your neck, your hands, your forehead, your jaw, your gut. And finally, self-talk. And again, the self-talk can be anything you want it to be. Sometimes a person just visualizes a peaceful, centered place. But we suggest two relaxers, two affirmers, two unhookers. That's your grounding self-talk. So take it easy, relax, calm down. I'm a good person. I'm doing the best I can in this moment. I have value. And finally, let go. It's not worth it. Be here now. I'm just a speck living on a speck. So relax, affirm, unhook, come to this moment, and we're going to call that grounded. Now remember, you can visit DynSkills, DynSkills.com for podcasts of all the previous shows and for other material, books, training, workshops, all on this general topic of effective humanistic interaction skills. Also, you can write in a question or a comment to zach@kepw.org, and I will be glad to share your question with the audience and answer it as best I can during the next show. For today, I've decided to donate this show, or dedicate this show, to control versus out of control. All the concepts and skills we teach you don't do you any good unless you're able to actually use them in an interaction. So to do that, I need to have access to and use my free will. Now, some people argue that there is no free will. They're very fatalistic. The past, present, and future are already laid out, and all we have is the illusion of free will. I personally don't agree. I think we do have free will. We just don't use it very much. Remember, all the things that I do that are impulsive, that are habitual, that are learned, reactive, instinctive, and more, all of those kinds of behaviors do not represent free will. They happen kind of automatically. So to manage and use my free will requires some training. I see lots of people who share behaviors that they did that don't coincide with their best sense in their heart and soul of what they should do, or doesn't match their values, they're ashamed or guilty about what they said or did. And that's because for my values or logic or even my chosen skill set to influence my behavior requires that I be able to choose my response and not just react. What I believe is one of, if not the most, greatest and wonderful gift that an ego is given is free will. But I have to learn how to use it and manage it. So when we manifest, and remember, manifesting is going from soul to ego, or from energy to matter. My matter, my mind, my body, my personality is all part of what we call my ego. And I believe that free will belongs to the ego. The soul, the light, however you refer to that, can suggest, can tell you maybe what's wise or what's good for you to do, but the decision rests with the ego. Free will is necessary, I think, for all of creation, all of manifestation, to have value. Without free will, it's just a big dollhouse and one soul is pushing the pieces around, which is kind of lonely and kind of boring. So again, creation has to include free will. And we as beings are in an educational process across God knows how many incarnations to learn how to use and manage that free will so that the ego in the long run and the soul, the light, are acting in harmony, that the ego can choose to do those behaviors that the soul is happy with. And that's one way to define what we might call enlightenment. So we're working on important stuff here from a transpersonal and humanistic point of view. Now, many of my behaviors are what I would call impulsive reactions. In other words, they're behaviors that are driven by the emotional charge I get when I'm triggered. Many examples of that, like if a mosquito lands on my arm and starts to bite me, I might swat that mosquito even though I think life is sacred, even though I think I shouldn't kill anything unnecessarily, yet there I go swatting that mosquito, and somebody seeing me do that would go, "Oh, I thought you said life was sacred. I thought you don't kill unnecessarily." Well, yes, but that's my value, and if I was always choosing and always using my free will, I might gently brush the mosquito away from my skin or even let it bite me. But swatting it and killing it was an impulsive reaction, not a product of my values or my reason, but rather a reaction to an emotional experience I have when I feel the mosquito land on me or especially start to bite me. Same thing if my spouse says something that pushes my buttons, causes an emotional response in me, then if that response is strong enough, if my feelings are powerful enough, they will override my free will and I will react based on that emotional charge and trigger. And usually those are not the best reactions and tend either to cause an escalation between us or be met with some disapproval or hurt. Don't want to go there. So practicing impulse control is an important set of skills that we're going to discuss in the rest of this show. Many things are impulsive behaviors. And so think of it this way. If I'm grounded, no particular charge at a given moment, and I get triggered by something that causes a charge in me, and remember, my emotions contain energy, and that energy motivates 10. and time across the bottom. So as time's passing, I'm experiencing things. We'll call zero absolute ground. And unless you're dead or the Buddha incarnate, probably zero is never where you are. But two on that left side, two, we'd call relative ground, which is about as grounded as I get when I ground myself, and that's pretty good. Between zero and two is whatever stored charge we may have, unfinished business, past unresolved issues, future stresses. All of those things are triggers. All of those things produce an emotional charge. And they're not resolved, so they sit inside me somewhere, what we call chronic tension. And that keeps me from absolute ground or zero. But let's suppose for me that two is pretty good. I mean, some people look at that chart and they say, when I ground myself, I'm at nine. And at 10, I'm impulsively acting out. And what they're describing is a person with a lot of baggage, a lot of charge that they're carrying around. But for many people, when they ground, when they center, when they relax, they can get to a decent two, which is not absolute, but pretty grounded. If something pushes their buttons and they get triggered, they can go to, say, four or five. At four or five, they're not acting out. They can still hold the charge. They can still retain some manner of ground and free will. And it's if they don't want to escalate and they don't deal with that charge, then they're cruising along at five. And then something else happens. Suppose you and I are changing a tire on a car. And first thing is, when you step up to take the tire off, you step on my foot, and ow, I feel, but I'm trying to focus on getting the tire changed. We're on the side of the road. I don't want to make a thing out of it, so I don't say anything. The pain from my foot takes me from a two to, say, a four. And then when you swing the lug wrench around, you wrap me on the knee. Ow again, and I hurt. And so now I go from four to, like, seven, but I still don't say anything. At seven, I can still control myself and I can still act as though I'm pretty grounded. And then you go for a cold drink, but you don't bring me any, and I feel insulted or not considered. And then I'm at 9.5, which is primed to go off. One more little thing, like if you tell me, can I hurry up with hubcaps because you have a hot date tonight, then maybe I go, damn it, and I react in an explosive way, what I would call impulsive acting out. And that's a bad graph. You can see, if you imagine it, how the line over time goes from 2 to 4 to 7 to 9.5. There's a point of no return at 8 or 9 where I'm holding enough energy that something's going to happen that sets me off. And then I act out impulsively. So if I'm grounded and I get triggered one or more times and I build up an emotional charge, when I cross 10 on the chart, I act out of that emotion. And that's any impulsive behavior acts that way. This is part of understanding why willpower alone doesn't work on addiction, because I have a pattern of impulsive acting out with my addiction. And if every time I get triggered, I suppress that urge and I force myself to not reach for the drug, I am building the same kind of bomb. I'm setting myself up to increase my chronic charge over time until one of those triggers at one of those times, and I actually reach for the drug or relapse at that point. It's a very common pattern with someone who suffers an addiction. And one of our social delusions is that willpower should do it. Just say no. If you know that you shouldn't do this drug, just don't do it. Well, human behavior is not that simple. And when I build up charges, it gets harder and harder to control my behavior. So there has to be some way to relieve that stress, some way to control my impulses, some way to resolve the issues that come up when I get triggered. Without that, willpower alone is not going to prove effective over time. So, impulse control, learning to access my free will, making responsible choices based on my values and my logic, would seem important to human development, to using any of the skills that we discuss in these programs, to acting in accord with my values and with my logic and with what makes me feel best or most respectful about myself. And to make that choice involves some training. Now, there are several different methods to develop your use of your free will or your control of your impulses. I'm going to present one here right now. So, again, an impulse, we start grounded, we get triggered, we have an emotional charge that repeats until the charge gets too strong, and then we have an urge, and then we act out, either out of anger or hurt or threat, whatever. So, that's an impulsive formula. Grounded, triggered, feeling, charge builds, urge to act, act. Impulsive reaction. Impulse control looks like this. I start grounded. And remember, we want you to ground many times a day before you start anything. If my wife says, "Can we talk for a minute?" I say, "Hold on. Take a breath. Ground and center. And then begin." It's a better place to start from. So if I start off grounded and I get triggered and the trigger causes me to have an emotional charge, my early warning system goes off. That means I have to train myself to notice when I get a button pushed. And remember, if the button that gets pushed sends me from relative ground at 2 to slightly charged at 4 or 5, I may not notice it if I suppress it fast enough. I have to teach myself what that feels like and how to notice it so that I develop a sense. I don't want to try and intervene when I'm already at 8 or 9 because I won't be able to stop it. I'd rather have an early warning system, which means I want to use this impulse control model when I'm at 3 or 4 or 5. So I want to know what that feels like. And I have to negotiate with myself a little bit, because if I'm at 4 or 5, I can choose to continue the conversation without much change in my reactivity. But I'm already building a charge. I'm already building a bomb. I'd rather not do that. Impulse control says you're grounded. You get triggered. You have an emotional charge. You notice that charge. And whenever you notice the charge, the next step in the impulse control process is to pause, stop the interaction, take space for a moment. Remember, you have the right to space. You can call it anytime. You don't have to justify it. It's one of the first things I do when I work with couples is help them develop a pause button or a way to take space so that they can pause their interaction with the understanding that they'll return to that conversation in a reasonable amount of time for both of them, so nobody feels deserted or shut up or shut off or avoiding the process of finishing the conversation. That's not what it's for. So you're grounded, you get triggered, you have a feeling. You take space. You call time. You say, "I need a moment." People who are going to be in any kind of healthy relationship with you have got to respect that. If you violate the right of to space, if I remember, trapped animals bite. So if the person does not give you space when you ask for it, that is a royal road to escalation and a bigger fight or misunderstanding or unpleasant experience. Now, once you create that space, once you pause the interaction, you are indeed alone for a moment. So what do you do while you're alone? There's a tendency sometimes for people to keep thinking about what pushed their buttons, but that's not a great first step when you're alone, because that tends to re-trigger you and can escalate your feelings even more, and then you come back more charged than you left, and that's not particularly useful. So when you pause, again, you notice a button got pushed, your early warning system goes off. It could be a flutter in your stomach or a feeling in your head or a wrinkling of your brow. Whatever it is tells you, pause now. And then the first thing you want to do is ground, just the way we grounded at the beginning of the show. Unhook, let go, take a breath, focus on something that's not the conversation. Self-affirm, whole thing, ground. Once you feel grounded, and some people can do that in a few seconds, and some people may need an hour or two, but you can't reconnect and try and act non-impulsively or out of free will if you're not grounded. The more grounded you are, the more free will you have. So ground first. Once you feel grounded enough, relative ground, we're close to two again, then clarify. Then you can review what happened before you took the time out. And what you want to recognize is the trigger and the feeling that it inspired or motivated. So when I was triggered when I heard this from her, and it made me feel this in reaction to it. And incidentally, remember that if what you identify is anger, like he said this and it made me angry, remember, nothing the other person says can make you angry. They can only make you vulnerable. If you feel hurt, if you feel threatened, if you feel disrespected, not listened to, embarrassed, any of those can fuel anger. So if you identify anger, oh, he said that and I got angry. Remember, no, he said that and I felt vulnerable. And what you want to recognize when you're clarifying with yourself is, what was your vulnerability? Because that's really the issue that needs to be resolved. So I want to identify the trigger and identify my vulnerability. That's clarifying. And even I might then plan, how do I want to share this when I get back? It won't come out exactly the same, but it's good to have an idea. So ground, clarify, plan. Oh, and by the way, if you're one of those people who says, when I ground, I only get down to 7 or 8 or 9, so one little trigger, one little upset, and I find myself acting out or speaking impulsively, so there's no time to think or reconsider or step back, that describes a person with a lot of baggage, a lot of stored energy. So when someone has so much stored emotional energy that they can't ground lower than 7 or 8 or even 6, then a preliminary piece of work, a personal goal, can be to learn, and there are many methods for doing it, how to resolve some of that baggage, how to become aware of it, how to express the energy, how to resolve the situations that are unresolved in my head, because I have to create space between ground and impulse. And then you're ready to return and try and resolve the situation, but I highly recommend that when you return, you ask, offer that you're feeling grounded, and ask if the other person's grounded enough to continue calmly and respectfully with each other. I had a friend who was a great auto mechanic and also a very angry dude at times, but also had a great heart and I loved him. But he was a great mechanic, and you know, with his friends, with his family, and the interactions on the road, he could lose his temper in a heartbeat and react impulsively out of his own sense of vulnerability and anger. But when he worked on cars, I noticed, he was always calm. So what was different about the cars? And what I noticed is that when he would, like, bang a knuckle with his wrench while he was loosening a nut, he would, by habit, drop the wrench and step back from the car and take a breath. He practiced nearly perfect impulse control in the realm of his mechanics. He just had to learn how to convert that interaction with the car engine to his interaction with anybody or anything. But he already had the skill to do it, because when he would step back and take a breath and remember what he was doing and how he wanted to do it, and he would always tell me that, you know, mechanics should be easy. If you're forcing something, if you're busting a knuckle, if you're twisting hard, you're probably doing it wrong. So he was great at impulse control when he worked on a vehicle. Other times, he struggled more with the concept. So, you ground, you get triggered, you feel a charge, you stop. That's the first hard part of the training. So excuse me a second, give me a moment. You reground, you clarify, you plan, and then you offer to return and resolve, making sure both parties or all parties are grounded before you continue. Remember, when you act from free will, your tendency is to do things that harmonize with your values, with your self-respect and self-regard, with your reason, with how you feel you should be, what psychoanalytically they would call your superego. You might think of it as your soul, the light, your role model, they're all the same, but they don't decide your behavior. You, the ego, me, Zach, you, Tom, or Sally, that's who decides what you do. And when you let impulse control be part of your master, you learn, you get better at grounding, better at recognizing triggers, better at taking space when you need it, better at identifying triggers and identifying vulnerabilities and figuring out what to do about that. One of the fringe benefits of that is that you'll notice a rise in your self-esteem when you act that way. And that's worth a lot. As your respect for yourself goes up, as your love for yourself goes up, you have more of those things to share with others, which leads to better relationships and, I believe, a better world. So, have a good week. We're going to talk about this a little more next week in terms of addictions and what to do about them. Remember to write in with questions, zach@kepw.org, or visit the website at dyinskills, dyinskills.com. And hope to meet with you again next week and continue our journey of education and learning and applying the concepts and skills that I call the art of relating. Have a good week.